the scalability of having a digital company, having a digital thread within the company is really pretty dramatic. You can certainly look at increasing the volume for what you're manufacturing pretty easily. You can simulate from an industrial standpoint. You really have a much better view of the future and what's happening.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Optimistic Outlook. I'm Barbara Humpton, CEO of Siemens USA. So to kick off the year, I shared my first Optimistic Insights episode, where I talked through the trends driving a resurgence in American manufacturing. We're seeing significant levels of new investment in American industry. Siemens alone invested more than $500 million into new U.S. manufacturing facilities last year. Today, we're going to look at this from a slightly different perspective. We're going to think about the nation's existing supply chain, in this case, one that provides component parts to the manufacturers building aircraft for American aerospace. Aerospace manufacturers have been addressing a steady backlog of orders, and what we're going to do is explore the potential for technologies from 3D printing to software to help these suppliers produce their component parts faster. You'll see it's possible for suppliers to make components that perform better and are more sustainable. Our expert to guide us through this is Brian Neff. He's the CEO of Syntavia, an additive manufacturing firm supplying vital components for companies such as Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman, and others. And you might recognize this name because Brian has been on this podcast before in 2021. Let's get into the conversation. Brian, it's great to have you back on the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me.
Hey, in our last conversation, you painted the picture of the potential for additive manufacturing or 3D printing in the United States. And today I want us to look at this a little differently. I want us to think about how we can enable additive manufacturing, how we scale additive processes across American industry. But first, let's start with the why. You know, I was looking back at our first conversation and I saw a reference to a trend we've been calling glocalization. It's a world that's ever more global, ever more connected, but where we recognize the value of manufacturing things closer to the point of demand. So glocalization has been bringing out new investment. At the same time, our supply chains supporting American aerospace remain under tremendous pressure. So let me ask you, how has your vision for being an additive company given you an advantage in serving your customers?
Well, first, thanks again for having me on 3 years after I was here the last time. This is an exciting podcast to join, and I always enjoy the questions and the discussion. I think first, you have to think about our development as a company. We started out as lovers of the technology, as believers in the technology, without a real purpose or a real end market in mind. And so we were looking at different industries. I'm personally from the aerospace industry, and my background is commercial aerospace. But when we started out, we were looking at, you know, oil and gas, and of course, aerospace and defense, but automotive, automation. And we were trying to sort of figure out where the right approach was for the use of additive in terms of an end market. What we found over time is that we really needed to focus on specific end components and end markets, and that is aerospace components, particularly mechanical components. And so we don't really view ourselves as an additive company anymore. We are the world's first all-digital aerospace component manufacturer. And I think that's looking at the last 3 years and our development and who we are has been the major change. We are taking a need within the aerospace and defense industry, specifically thermodynamics or propulsion, and we're using additive as a tool to develop a digitally optimized and improved component. And I think that's a pretty fundamental difference in the way that we've looked at our company over the past 3 years.
Well, let me follow up on that and spotlight part of your strategy. As you shared with our audience before, with 3D printing, you can really make anything that you can dream up and design virtually. You took a more focused approach, though, as you say, dialing in on a few components that are essential to the aerospace industry. Take us through the journey and tell us a little bit about what Syntavia makes and then the evolution of how you've improved those components.
We were sort of looking at the end markets within aerospace and defense, and we really found that where the interest is and where the real need is for complex mechanical components really was on the defense sphere. I had never in my past career been a defense contractor or supplier up into the Department of Defense, but just given the geopolitical considerations out there, some of the military technology considerations out there, certainly, as you mentioned, supply chain considerations, it was just very apparent that defense was where the attention was, where the funding was. And I think that's pretty consistent if you look at historical trends in technology and in innovation. Certainly, the internet is famously funded originally by the Department of Defense, but telecommunications, commercial nuclear industry, even the modern jet industry, these were all technologies that were first funded and really developed by the Department of Defense and then transitioned into the world of the commercial user. And I think we've all benefited from those technologies as they've matured. And that's kind of where we see aerospace components really being at this point, and something that was the need for a quieter submarine, or need for a faster rocket, or a better performing heat exchanger on a fighter jet. They're all really, really important requirements that we have, that the department has, that we have transitioned and really been able to supply.
We know that, you know, the depletion of defense articles, you know, as we engage in conflict around the world, it's really an issue of, you know, can the defense industrial base support the scale of production that's required right now? How do you think additive is going to factor into that equation?
Well, what's been very interesting to see with a conflict such as the Ukraine conflict is a couple things. And I've studied this, obviously I'm involved with this to some degree. Number one, the quality of our munitions and our material is better than our adversaries on a part-for-part basis. That's the good news. The bad news is that it's very, very difficult for us to maintain that material. And I always look at the Bradley fighting vehicle. The treads on those vehicles, they break. And when they break, the whole vehicle is immobilized. And there's a very long lead time to get parts to resupply those. As an example of using additive at the point of need or near the point of need, with Ukraine, I think we've seen the fact we do have good equipment out there, but we're not able to really support it as well as we should. And so additive really is a solution to that at the point of need at the forward operating bases. The next generation of fighters will absolutely have to rely on additive to build their aerostructures, to build their gearbox housings, et cetera.
As you've thought about the evolution of this, one of the things I'm curious about, I read your press release from last summer, and the work that you're doing now, as I understand it, in larger format items.
People say to me sometimes about additive, is this technology becoming obsolete? Is there a new additive technology that's coming down that's going to render all of your investments and all of your knowledge base obsolete? And the answer is absolutely not. What has happened is that in the world of powder bed fusion, machines are getting bigger, they're having more lasers, and the software is getting faster and smarter. It's resulting in a faster, more cost competitive delivery product. And what we found, the crazy thing is, Barbara, that the knock on powder bed fusion and additive always was that it was too expensive at the unit level, and that you couldn't get economies of scale at the with this technology. It was one print, one part. And I get that when you're dealing with very small, somewhat slow single laser systems. When you start to add 4 lasers or 8 lasers or 12 lasers, you really do start to see economies of scale, and you really, really, really do start to be competitive with traditionally manufactured components. That's the buy-in that we're seeing across the market, is that the traditional versions of these components are now more expensive than the additive version. And the other thing that happened was in June of last year, we sold a minority position in our company since I'm the majority owner, to Lockheed Martin. And that has been such a smart move on our part. And it was really something that has panned out for us almost a year later. And that's because as the largest defense contractor out there, Lockheed, they always like to say that their supply chain is the defense industrial base. And I think that's very, very powerful in that they have contacts across pretty much every program that's out there. And they're able to see which areas have the greatest need. And that's been the key for us. Where is the supply chain failing the most? On what programs are we seeing huge delays? Are we seeing huge performance issues? Are we seeing cost overruns? let's use additive to fill those gaps and to fix those problems. And I think that that's something that has been really, really gratifying for us working with Lockheed. And, you know, within the defense industrial base, it's certainly a competitive industry, but because of the nature of all of those lead systems integrators and how they're all sort of related to each other, it's nice to see that there is some cooperation.
Yeah, Brian, this note that you make about Lockheed Martin and their investment in you, it's really interesting because this is a phenomenon we're seeing right now is the power of ecosystems. And when a prime contractor like Lockheed Martin notices the power of an emerging technology and then invests in it and helps bring it to market, it's actually helping to accelerate the innovation cycle. And so I'm hearing all of the key attributes that we look for with our ecosystem partners, the alignment of our objectives, the ability to enhance each other's performance, and then this recognition that we're actually specializing in things that are very, very different. And Lockheed Martin isn't going to replicate what you've done. You're not going to replicate what Lockheed Martin has done, but together you're going to be able to respond to the Department of Defense more effectively. We hear a lot about how technology can help execute an operating model. No, technology is the operating model. And Centavia is demonstrating this today by how you've used software to implement what we call a digital thread. So, Brian, how do you define the digital thread?
It is an overused term. We all sort of can accept that, but I think there's probably not a better term to use that's out there. And what it means to us, and the way I look at it, is effectively a single file or a single digital source of data that can describe a component and then instruct how that component is manufactured and is processed and is tested, all in effectively a single file. Now, understanding that there are different operating, a different computer programs within that file that will probably have to be used, but with respect to the Siemens program where everything, the operating system, where everything sort of talks to itself, that's really the power. You can have a digital thread that's a bunch of different thumb drives that are sitting on your desk that you have to kind of, plug and play, or you can have it under a single roof, which is the path that we've chosen. And so when you're able to access data at different points in a component's manufacturing lifecycle and, understand what's happening at those points and change variables at those points and see the impact upstream and downstream, that's what I mean by a digital thread, in that it's all connected. Every aspect of that component's life, while it's going from an idea in an engineer's head to going out the shipping and receiving door, is captured in a single file or in a single location and is able to be accessed and manipulated as needed to ensure that the component meets the quality standards it needs to and also is certifiable.
So you at Centavia have actually gone through a process to introduce all aspects of the digital thread into your operations. Give us some behind the scenes insights into the steps you went through to make that possible.
Well, when we started out, we were never, because additive is a digital technology by nature, we were always a digital company. I mean, we weren't out there with slide rules, and pieces of paper on clipboard, et cetera. We were always a digital company. We never really put together a system that really was talking to itself and talking to other aspects within the manufacturing process. The other aspect is our revenue base and our customer base was so diverse that we really struggled with dealing with some of the certification requirements of other industries. And as a result, we ended up with a system that, while it was on a computer, it was really sort of, well, I remember we have to go over here to find this. And, oh, no, I remember you have to go and do this. So the element of human error was quite high. And as we changed our revenue profile and our customer profile and focused really on lead systems integrators within the defense industry, platform OEMs within the commercial aerospace and space industry, it's made it a lot easier for us to adopt a fully digital in a manufacturing environment.
Do you think of yourself as a digital native company, or how has your team had to adapt their practices to make this overall process successful?
I would say that for the most part, we are a digitally native company in that when we started out, we did use the whole Excel paper router type process. We were just getting to know the software on the machines and the software on the file modeling, et cetera. And I remember it was about 2020 and I was at a Siemens event and I had a great slide, which I still use and I still love, that showed all of the different modules that exist out there that in order to be successful in creating a full digital thread, if you're not using a software like Siemens, you have to import and export throughout all of them from design and simulation and the building the manufacturing plan and then processing through the printer and post-processing and certification. You know, I call it the balkanization of software. It's just, it's very cumbersome. There's definitely no feedback upstream and downstream. And so when we started out, we were using some of that. We were, as I sadly say, we were using, you know, Excel sometimes when 2015, 2016, 2017. And so when we made that transition, it was painful, but it wasn't, since we were so small, it wasn't really the hardest thing for us to do. Without question though, Barbara, the number one thing that companies encounter, and this has always been the most important and also most difficult thing to change, is culture. And are we going to buy into becoming a fully digital company? And I was able to, with the help of a great team and great leadership within that team, make the argument to our 100 plus employees that this is the direction that we're going and here's the benefits to that. So, you know, take the time up front to get trained, to understand what is required of you as a engineer, as a technician, or as a quality inspector to make it work. And we're getting to that point where there's almost a complete buy-in in what we're doing. And once you have that, once the culture is established, then it rolls forward very, very well. When you're dealing with something that is as complicated as an F-35 heat exchanger or an impeller for a submarine, and you're simulating and you're looking at it and you end up with a problem here, you want to be able to trace that problem way back and see if you change this on either the manufacturing plan or on the simulation or wherever, on the post-processing. And then when you do have setbacks, as you always do, you need to see in both directions. And you need to understand why, or at least why you think something happened, and you need to course correct. And having that full digital thread is absolutely critical.
This is the whole magic of the moment, is that we're not just doing what we used to do using new tools. You can actually do different things now, and you're exploring that edge. Now, this has led to some incredible business growth as well. You've experienced 40% growth over these last years. What's the potential now that you've activated the digital thread solution?
Well, I think it becomes easier. That's the thing. You know, the initial curve on understanding how to use the technology is a big one. And I think that we're beyond that. So the scalability of having a digital company, having a digital thread within the company, is really pretty dramatic. You can start looking at adjacent part families. You can certainly look at increasing the volume for what you're manufacturing pretty easily. You can simulate from an industrial standpoint. I know that's an area that I've spoken with Siemens about, is what is the impact on your shop floor, like just from a scaling up standpoint, how does that look? You really have a much better view of the future and what's happening. So I look at the programs that we're on, and we're going to continue to perform great on those, but there's all these other different areas. And that's one thing I love about the Lockheed investment, is that, again, they know where their sticky points are, and there's a lot of them. So we are, you know, knock on wood, we have enough business as we can handle for the next, you know, 5-6 years. And having that digital backbone is really how we're going to be successful at doing that. I mean, going in my career, once you get to $20, $30, $40 million of sales, getting to $200 or $300 million in sales is actually pretty easy. But you can only get there if you have a really, really good system in place, certainly from a manufacturing standpoint. And I think that that's where we are right now. And the future is very, very bright.
So your own operations are benefiting. I'd love to hear what advice you have for small or medium-sized businesses, particularly those who are thinking about, you know, making a change while they actually sustain their continuity of operations.
Understand that we live in the world of additive in a digital environment. That's not going to change. Be grateful that you're a digital company to begin with, not the traditional manufacturer trying to make the change. So I think that makes it easier. But bite the bullet, you know, make the investment. You don't have to eat the whale in one bite, so to speak. Start out with something that is more understandable, and then have a plan to continue to add on different modules. I mean, it took us years to get to where we are because we did it in a very sequential manner. And I guess the last thing is just to be patient and to have your team really buy into what you're doing, explain why you're doing what you're doing.
Well, Brian, it's been great to have you back. And I'm sure you remember, I always like to end our shows by turning the floor over to you to provide an optimistic vision for the future. If we are able to take these next steps as you've been experiencing them, how is this positively going to benefit American manufacturing?
Well, I think all the goals that we've had and that we spoke of in the past and that people still speak of still exist and are still going to come to fruition as the adoption curve continues on the use of additive as a manufacturing technology. Better productivity per employee, a more sustainable manufacturing process, lower unit costs, more secure supply chain. All of these goals are going to happen. And I think as the machines get bigger, as the software gets faster and there's more lasers, as I mentioned, you will start to see the unit costs really drop. And that is going to be what really helps this technology take off. But the digital manufacturing itself I sometimes conflate the two. I think of additive as the digital manufacturing and digital manufacturing as additive. But I think digital manufacturing is much larger. And there's a lot of other great opportunities for use of the software and the idea of the digital thread. But specifically to additive, it's the goals are still out there, and we are going to get to those for the broader picture, and we still are on track to reach the end that we all want.
It's exciting. This is a business in transformation, and it's fun to check in with you.
Thank you very much for the opportunity. It's great to talk to you, Barbara.
Hey, so I hope you've learned a lot from this conversation. With additive manufacturing, we can produce things faster, more cost-effectively, and more sustainably. We can make things that perform better, too. And Brian and the team at Syntavia demonstrate a big opportunity that we have all of the technologies we need to industrialize 3D printing across American manufacturing. So we've put plenty of resources for you in the show notes if you want to dive deeper into anything Brian and I discussed. And please reach out to me on LinkedIn if you have comments or feedback on what we've talked about. I'll see you next time. Please follow us on social media and on your favorite podcasting platform. Thank you for tuning in.